challenges that we faced throughout the winter were both created and exacerbated by management's slow response times, uncaring and uncooperative nature, and as we'll see in the end, their failure to meet our needs or even communicate their plans for our fate. It was managerial paralysis, and it forced us into a dangerous decision. Welcome to Episode 5 of Sailing Infidels on the Outside Looking In, The Storm. This is the continuing tale of the Sailing Infidels and how the COVID-19 lockdowns impacted us in the remote and secluded paradise that had initially presented itself as a safe haven. While the world around us was grappling with the challenges of lockdowns, though we had considered ourselves lucky to be so far removed from it all, 1 year after the pandemic had begun, our self-imposed isolation had turned from safety of seclusion to imperiled isolation. We were more than halfway through our fifth season as caretakers at Slodge. We loved it there, but there were few good things we could say about the company. On the positive side, there was never any doubt that the paychecks would arrive on time and in full, and we loved that we were mostly left alone. Having our sailboat with us was also a bonus, and of course, the great fishing combined with a well-stocked tackle room was a nice perk. The negatives, though, were significant. Over the years, the company proved itself to be largely uncaring about the caretakers, unless, of course, something would negatively affect them. A prime example was early in 2018 when I injured my back after falling down some icy stairs. My report included pictures of the injuries to my back. They were pretty severe. Yet Jordan never asked how much pain I was in or even if I might need an air ambulance. I was simply told to monitor myself and report back in a few days. Neither did he bother to do any of the required paperwork for an injury on the job. There were other instances as well where we were the recipients of outright contempt from Jordan, but since we were mostly left alone, we just resigned ourselves to keeping our mouths shut, heads down, and ignoring his crap. As much as I had hoped our new manager, Todd, would make a difference in that regard, there was no improvement. It was pretty much a company culture as far as I could tell. But this time we felt we had been tricked into this new predicament we found ourselves in. After learning from Todd that their lease may not even be renewed and that there was no fuel coming in for the fast approaching winter, he was beyond negligent in not disclosing that lease issue. It was intentional. When we were still in Prince Rupert, he oddly asked me what our plans were for the fall. Without a second thought, I replied that we'd be happy to return to the lodge for another season. Had we known about the lease possibly expiring in November, our decision may well have been much different. So there we were, in the reality that we were living through, and though spring would soon be on its way, fuel was disappearing fast. We were awakened shortly before 4 a.m. by the sound of increasing winds. We knew it was only going to get worse, so we didn't bother trying to get back to sleep. Instead, we begrudgingly climbed out of bed and started the coffee. Low tide was predicted for around 5:30 a.m. Every morning I would trek to shore to start the generator, and I would start the portable generator on my way back. The state of the tide and the sunken dock naturally played a part in the exact timing. Going ashore a little before low tide was optimal so that I would still be able to go back to shut the generator down after 2 hours of runtime. Otherwise, the dock would be too swamped to make it across on one trip or the other. The other factor of concern, of course, was wind and waves. It was February 25th, and the forecast was for sustained winds near 60 knots and gusts near 70. Storm force winds are classified at 47 to 63 knots, and hurricane force starts at 64 knots. It was coming in directly from the west, the direction from which we were most exposed. A quick side note here. A knot is a measurement of speed, and it equals 1.852 kilometers per hour. 70 knots is 130 kilometers per hour. When the time was right to go ashore, the wind was still blowing at only 20 to 30 knots. I prepared myself mentally as I donned my foul weather gear. I turned on the spreader lights, fully committed to war with the angry force that was presently pounding the outside of cosmic debris. The cosmic debris sat nicely right beside the helipad in calm waters. Because her anchor points were hundreds of feet away, she was able to move about a lot in the wind and waves. My first battle in this war would be just to get off the boat. We were a long ways from the helipad, and we were pitching and rolling violently. When we moved cosmic debris in toward the helipad, I tied a long line from the starboard midship's cleat to a cleat on the helipad and left a lot of slack in it. It was intended as both a failsafe in case she broke loose and to enable us to pull her closer to the helipad if necessary for boarding or deboarding. I stood at the starboard gate, hanging on to the safety hold on the Dodger, impatiently waiting for her to sail toward the helipad so that I could jump off safely. She sailed back and forth, teasing me with every approach, but never getting close enough for me to make the leap. As I waited, I watched the helipad buck and heave as each huge wave slammed into it before taking flight across its 40-foot span and hitting the dock it was chained to. I looked into the darkness at the docks leading to shore. Each was bucking and heaving, and none was in sync with the other. Though I was questioning the wisdom of the endeavor I was about to embark on, I had to try. I gave up waiting to be delivered to the helipad. I went forward and grabbed my midship line to haul us in toward the helipad. I waited until we were moving toward the pad, and I began pulling. Using the momentum, I pulled us in, quickly dropped the line, and jumped overboard onto the helipad. As the 40-foot by 40-foot concrete pad rocked in reaction to the pounding waves, each one assaulted me as I staggered across towards the bridge over to the nearest dock. I had made this bridge out of an extension ladder with 2x12s lashed to it and asphalt shingles nailed on for safety. The extension ladder was lashed to both the dock and the helipad, which allowed it to extend and retract as the pad and dock moved the boat independently. With the winter temperatures and the breeze combined, there was ice built up on the asphalt shingles on the bridges. Many of the shingles had already been lost in the wind before the ice could form. That, and the violent movement of the helipad and the docks, made crossing the bridges a very interesting prospect. The distance between the helipad and the first dock was shorter than usual because the helipad was being forced toward the dock by the wind and waves. Still, the water looked very cold, and if I did fall, there was a risk of being crushed between the two. I paused at the bridge and waited for the right time to go. I took that opportunity to plan each step to avoid as much ice as I could. Once I was safely over to the dock, with the theme song to Super Mario Brothers playing clearly in my head, I continued to the next dock and the next bridge, then to the next. These bridges were simple laminated 2x12s covered in asphalt shingles. One end of each bridge was pinned to one dock, with the other sliding on Teflon sheets. 2x4 guides kept them from sliding off, most of the time. Naturally, the closer I got to shore, the shallower the water became, and so too, the more the docks heaved, adding yet another element of danger to the crossing, the sudden shock of the pontoons hitting the ground. I stood at the bridge to the sunken dock and watched, as it in particular posed the biggest challenge. This dock was mostly sitting on the ground and one pontoon was sort of semi-floating. That caused the opposite end of the bridge to rest on only one corner of the plank, making it unstable. The fact that it was only semi-floating meant that the waves could pick it up much easier and throw it to the full length of the chains that connected it to the dock I was standing on. This bridge was a clear no-go. Because of the more violent nature of the relationship between these two docks, the bridge, though it was still hanging on in place, looked as though it would come off one or the other or both of the docks at any time. I pondered the situation for a moment. I could try, but even if I did make it across, by the time I returned from the generator shack, would I even be able to get back across? And if I did, would I be able to get back to shore to shut the generator down in 2 hours? If not, how many hours would it be before I would be able to shut the generator down? I had no answer for that last question, and we were in no position to be wasting fuel. I went back to the boat. Once back on the helipad, I refilled the fuel tanks for the portable generator and started it up. I fixed up its shelter as best I could, but the wind had already been wreaking havoc with that. Oh yes, the wind. It had increased significantly since I came out. We witnessed many winter storms over our 5 seasons in that cove, but always from within the confines of the lodge, and never any of this magnitude. Anyone who has ever been through a hurricane has my respect. By the time I was back inside Cosmic Debris, soaking up some warmth and trying to dry out, I'd been gone for about an hour. While I was gone, Wendy decided to get some breakfast ready before the storm made it too difficult a task. Unfortunately, she had no way of knowing when I'd return from my adventure, so she prepped everything, but had to hold off on cooking until I was safely back aboard. As the big hand passed the little hand in their respective races toward the 12 and 7, the wind was now happily clocking steadily in the 45 to 55 knot range, while the barometric pressure had fallen dramatically to a low of 945 millibar. Life had become rather unsettled below decks. I looked out of a midship starboard side deadport to see that not only were we a long way out from the helipad, but we were also straining so far back towards shore that I was now looking at the side of the dock that the helipad was connected to. With sights of waves and dock fenders flashing before my eyes as I peered out of that deadport, along with the aural combination of banshees wailing from their perches among the rigging and the sizzling sound of bacon and eggs, we were vigorously sailing around a wide area, testing the strength of our lines and anchor points. I wondered how long this would go on. I wondered what was happening on shore. Sustained winds were well entrenched into the mid to high 50s by this time and gusting into the 60s. I watched as the helipad seemingly sailed into the darkness beyond the reach of the spreader lights. I listened as the wailing and the rigging rapidly increased in both pitch and volume, and then suddenly, Cosmic Debris was yanked to starboard by the recoil as we hit the end of the safety line. Plates waiting to be filled with breakfast were tossed into the sink and to the floor. The hot frying pans slid off the induction stovetop and into Wendy's bare hands, and Cosmic Debris began the return trip to the side of the helipad. Incredibly, not only was Wendy not injured, but she made the save and continued cooking breakfast. Another reason for the moniker Wonder Woman. The highest gust recorded that morning was 68 knots, and we believe that was the one that rung the bell. It happened just before daybreak. A short time later, just after daylight, our portable generator stopped. Its shelter, along with 2 sawhorses, were blown or swept away, never to be seen by us again. The generator was swamped and could not be restarted, and it was not too much longer before the internet batteries on shore were completely depleted and our internet vanished. Then we waited. We waited for the winds to die down, for the incessant wailing to stop, and for the water to calm enough to allow us to get to shore. As the morning wore on, we lazed away the time watching the clouds race past the hatch above against a slowly expanding backdrop of blue and listening to the pitch of the wailing banshees descend into nothingness except for some increasingly intermittent gusts, all the while nodding in and out of a semi-conscious state of awareness. It was finally over. The turn of the tide wasn't until just before noon, and that coincided with the passing of the storm. Though because of the sunken dock, it would be later in the afternoon before the tide would be low enough that we could get to shore to see if we still had a generator, feed the cat, and survey the damage. In the meantime, once the wind had calmed enough, we retrieved, fixed, and redeployed the extension ladder bridge. It had become hooked on a dock cleat and pulled off of a helipad. This left us stranded, as Shante was tied up at the 3rd dock and the company boat was tied up on the 4th dock. The only way we could retrieve it was by using a pike pole and a boat hook. It took some time, but eventually we were ready for a trip to shore. The ice had disappeared from the bridges, and the docks were calm in comparison to earlier. Even retrieving the bridge and fixing the crossing to the sunken dock was relatively easy. The swell was still much larger than normal, but without the wind, the water was much more gentle. As we ascended the gangway and ventured beyond, other than the expected scattered branches and tree foliage that carpeted the boardwalk, everything seemed normal. As we rounded the corner at the top of the incline, we began to see the devastation. First was a downed tree that had fallen across one of the gasoline tanks. Next to the group of the 5 gasoline tanks, there was a row of 4 5,000-liter diesel tanks. unlike the gasoline tanks there under her roof. The diesel tanks were, of course, all empty, but the gasoline tanks had plenty of gas in them. I knew the contents were safe, as I would always close any valves after taking fuel out. Nevertheless, I checked for leaks at all the valves and joints. I found none. The roof over the diesel tanks had been blown right down on top of them, and further ahead, at the end of the row of the tanks, was the tool shed. It was now perched at a 45-degree angle from level, thanks to the root system of another toppled hemlock. It had fallen away from the shed, though its roots lifted one side high in the air. In all, over a dozen trees, mostly large hemlocks, had fallen on the property. Luckily for the company, the lodge was untouched. The boardwalk leading to the generator shack, which housed two generators, was heaved similar to the tool shed and blocked by two fallen trees, and worse, the generator shack itself had two large hemlock trees across its roof and another blocking its only doorway. When I saw the condition of that, I thought we were doomed. Without at least one of those generators, there would be no way to charge batteries, no way to keep the freezers in the basement from thawing, no way to pump fuel for our diesel heater, and no communication with the outside world. I clambered over the tree that blocked the doorway, but there was no way to open the door. It was jammed shut by the weight of the trees on the roof. I walked down the length of the trunk toward the side of the shack and jumped to the ground to go around behind. On my way, I passed the fuel tank that fed the generators. Though the roof above it had come down, the tank itself was fine, as were the fuel lines. In the rear wall of the generator shack, there were two large square holes cut to allow airflow for the radiators. I climbed through the biggest one to survey the damage inside the building. Both generators were untouched, so I took a quick look around at the electrical panels and wiring, and I started the 60-kilowatt John Deere. It fired right up, and I stood there in amazement. What a stroke of luck that was. I hit the switch for the power, and everything came to life. Meanwhile, Wendy had gone to the lodge to feed the cat and get something for dinner and look for damage. The cat was thrilled to see her, and even more thrilled about getting food, I'm sure. It must have been quite the experience for her. A quick look around the lodge revealed no issues of concern, so we headed back to the boat, checking the internet batteries and equipment on the way. Upon returning to the boat, I submitted a damage report to Todd, in which I requested a new portable generator. Over the following few days, we exchanged several emails as I provided management with the information they needed to get a sense of the situation on the ground. Todd kept saying that a response plan was being developed, but he never acknowledged my request for a generator or seemed to understand that running our diesel engine to charge our batteries was only using up the remaining fuel reserves faster. We were less than a month away from running completely out of fuel, and our fuel consumption had just increased significantly due to charging batteries with our engine, which brought D-Day that much closer. My frustration was growing, and they were not addressing that issue. Todd seemed more worried about fixing the roof on the diesel tanks than how to get fuel to shore. Tellingly, after the first few days, once they had pictures of all the damage and confirmation that there were no fuel leaks, communication from the office dwindled away. I was no longer in the loop, and my concerns were being ignored. The way I saw it, we had reached a point where the sunken dock was preventing the delivery of fuel. Fixing the dock required fuel, so the generator would have to run for 12 hours per day for at least 3 or 4 days. That again would hasten D-Day. Seemingly, we had entered a continuous feedback loop of problems preventing a resolution, and Todd seemed ever more ill-equipped to handle it. If there was a plan being formulated, he should have kept me apprised, because our survival was now the only thing I was concerned about. I began to watch for a break in the weather, and to think about the logistics of preparing for an exit. Join us in the next episode for more excitement. We appreciate your support. You are the wind in our sails. New episodes are released every second Sunday evening. Explore our captivating blogs and thrilling videos and contribute to the project at www.sailinginfidels.com. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram for updates, photos, and videos, and track us at www.noforeignland.com. Don't miss out. Stay connected and be part of the incredible journey.